rhino issue. You would also probably note that the wildlife crime is a priority crime within the Nat Joint. So there's a lot of things going on around the country, you know, and to really understand and pull out those things that are important, that is what we've really tried to do today, especially from a provincial perspective. I think the other thing that I wanted to highlight on this first slide is the concurrent competency issue. I'm sure you're well aware of it, but I think it really does start to complicate things when, you know, we're trying as the Environmental Management Inspectorate, and I'm going to talk about the Environmental Management Inspectorate just now. There isn't one boss, and everybody falls under that one boss. It is about coordination, and it's about bringing people together and trying to get information and trying to have a common priority within quite a complex environment because of the concurrent issues. So the next slide shows you the way in which there was an amendment to our National Environmental Management Act in 2005, which resulted in the creation of the Environmental Management Inspectorate, which, as I said, is not an agency, it's not a body, but it is all three spheres of government, national, provincial, and local. And what it does is it tries to give a national identity, and basically all the environmental compliance and enforcement functions now fall under this Environmental Management Inspectorate. EMIs, as we call them, have the powers to do compliance and enforcement, and whether you're a ranger sitting in Northwest Parks or whether you are a environmental enforcement officer down in the Western Cape dealing with Petra SA, you have the same types of powers. You're called an environmental management inspector. So it's trying to also bring all of those together. So within that fairly complex web, what we're trying to get you to understand just from the outset is that there are these EMIs sitting within the provinces, within the nature conservation compliance and enforcement function within the provinces, but there is a lot of other things going on around that as well. So that's just to highlight that issue. So I mentioned just now that you've got the rangers in the parks, whether they're sitting in the national park like Sand Parks or whether they're sitting in your provincial parks boards like Mpumalanga or Northwest or even Eastern Cape. They would be what we call grade 5 EMIs, and they have very specific powers. They go through a very specific training regime in order to be designated as a grade 5 EMI. And then their mandate, of course, is limited to that park for which they've been designated. So whether it's national or whether it's a provincial park, they would be mandated for that park. You will also see from some of the tables that some of the rangers have not gone through this EMI training yet, this grade 5 training, but they are in the process of going through that training. Then you have another almost group of EMIs, which are not so much your rangers that are on the ground doing anti-poaching exercises, but are more your types of investigators, your special investigators, the people that work very closely with the police that potentially do the crime scenes within those areas. And those are what we call the grade 1 and grade 2 EMIs. And those are also sitting within your nature conservation agencies within the provincial park. So when you ask about the compliance and enforcement capacity within the provinces, you need to understand that it's on two levels. It's on that investigative level, it's on a compliance monitoring level, and then it's also on the rangers anti-poaching type level. And then the last bullet, we just wanted to highlight the standard operating procedure that we have with the South African Police Service. And that is quite an important aspect of the way in which the environmental management inspectors work, because we can carry our own dockets. So we book out, the police book out the dockets to us when it comes to pure environmental crime, and those investigators will deal with that. But if it's organized crime or there's other types of crime like fraud or corruption, then the police would lead and the EMIs would support them. So there's this whole integrated relationship with the police as well that we need to be aware of when we go into this type of compliance and enforcement discussion. Then we tried to include some slides, and I know it's quite a long presentation, which is why I said I won't go through each and every table. But what we did in about July, August this year, we had a MINTEC workshop where we brought all the provinces together, specifically with a focus at that stage on rhino enforcement, and we asked them to identify their challenges, to tell us what is their capacity issues, what are their equipment issues, and a lot of that information started coming through, but in very difficult, you know, the way in which they were reporting it to us. So over the last few months, we've almost already tried to get them to start reporting more uniformly, which you can see there's still a problem in terms of the way in which they're reporting. But I think if you go into Mpumalanga, for instance, if you go into any of the provinces, you will see that they all complain about operational budgets, not having enough money for equipment, training, etc., and then, of course, not having enough compensation budget. And most people will complain about not having enough investigators, as well as not necessarily having enough rangers. This Mpumalanga for us is also just a particular challenge, because if you look at this table, which basically shows the personnel status and the capacity issues, you can see in terms of the approved structures, particularly for EMIs that are doing investigations, as well as in terms of, to a lesser degree, rangers, there is quite a big approved structure, but it's just not funded. So if you go into Mpumalanga currently and actually ask to see all the people that exist to do this work, there's really not a lot of people at all. Even though on their structure, you'll see there's 35 on their structure there, but there's actually only 7 that are funded. And so you'll find in terms of the investigations that are happening into Manyeleti and some of those other places, there's literally 7 investigators that are helping the police instead of the 35 that have been approved. And that is because there is just no funding to do that. Then there's quite a lot of slides, and as I said, I'm not going to go into the detail on it, but in what we tried to understand from each of the provincial authorities was, what equipment do you have and what do you need? And that's why the table is structured in this way, to say, what is existing, do you need more of those things, and do you have the budget for them? Mpumalanga, you can see, gave quite a long list of the equipment status, and some of them went down to kind of boots on the ground, you know, for the actual rangers, whereas others kept it more high level in terms of, you know, so you can see Mpumalanga really went into the sleeping bags and the day packs and all of that type of equipment. But in addition, they also identified the helicopters and the Bat Hawks and the vehicles that they also require. I seem to have gotten lost in all those slides. I'm just trying to get to the end. Okay. So that's Mpumalanga, and I suppose that the kind of priority for me is around that structure where it is approved but it is not funded. We then move on to Free State, and you can see, again, it starts to get quite complicated because the way in which they're structured are not all the same. So within the Free State, you don't have a parks board at all. You've got the rangers and the biodiversity investigative unit actually sitting within the department. And here you can see they provided us with a budget specifically for the enforcement investigative unit, which is made up of 11 officials. But they didn't really give us the budget around what are the rangers. You can see there's basically 13 rangers or rhino guards within 4 protected areas. They're asking for an additional 9, and they are saying that they don't have adequate budget for compensation, although they feel they do have for equipment. And again, they're the challenges, you know, dealing with very similar things. We have a lot of problems with our officials actually saying that they don't even have fuel to get into their vehicles to do some of that work, which really is a concern. There is the personnel status for Free State. You can see they are asking for some additional capacity, not that much, but there is some additional capacity required, and that is the equipment where, again, some of them go down to, you know, backpacks and boots, and then also requiring some of the other equipment. Then we moved into Northwest. Again, that is the budget now for biodiversity regulation within the Northwest department itself, which means that it doesn't just cover compliance and enforcement, it also covers the whole permitting function. And they couldn't really, at that stage, pull out the budget only for compliance and enforcement activities. And you know, I think we need to almost provide them with an easier way of being able to give us the figures that are uniform across all the provinces. So you can see it is all there, but it's not only for compliance and enforcement. And this was Northwest Parks, where in Northwest you do have that distinction where there is a parks board, and you can see the budget there is cross-cutting. It covers all the operations conducted by the field rangers. So again, it wouldn't necessarily be only compliance and enforcement or anti-poaching, but it would be about reserve management and all those other things as well. Similar in lack of information sharing, I think that does come up with regard to all of them, and that is more focused on particularly the rhino issue at the moment, the working together with the other law enforcement authorities, how well are they working together, how well are they sharing information that is sensitive and confidential. Within Northwest, there's also a particular issue around a lot of the rhinos existing on private property, and, you know, obviously there's suspicion then, and so there's a whole range of specific issues to Northwest. And then Northwest Parks has also identified similar issues. There's issues around informants. Should that actually be the role of us as conservation or environmental officials, or should that rather be a police function in any event? But it was raised as one of the challenges there. And then there's the Northwest status, where you can see here within the department specifically, they show you they've got 7 EMIs for enforcement, 31 to do pure compliance, and then within Northwest Parks is where all the rangers are sitting, and you can see the numbers there. Equipment status, I'm not going to go into that in detail as you have had a chance to look at these slides. Eastern Cape Department, similar challenges are raised there. As I said, I think all of them have raised compensation and operational budgets as being challenges. Here they do talk a little bit more about networks and transportation limits, but again, it's also coming up with regard to some of the other provinces as well. Eastern Cape Parks, similar, fleet, vehicles, operational budget, and there's your status. Eastern Cape is actually quite well resourced when it comes to investigators. So the Green Scorpions down in the Eastern Cape, there are 36 there. They are asking for an additional 4, but they are pretty well capacitated. Within the Eastern Cape Parks and Tourism Agency, again, I think they are, if you compare them to some of the other provinces, they are fairly well capacitated. They are, however, you can see, asking for some more EMIs at level 2, which are your investigators, as well as at level 5, which are your rangers. Equipment status, very similar, although they're not asking for as many things as some of the other provinces. Within Cape Nature, you can see there's only 3 members of their biodiversity crime unit, and that seems to be the budget that they're giving us rather than giving us some of the other budget. But again, very small. Their personnel budget is 1.2. Their operational budget is very, very small at Cape Nature for special investigation purposes. I know that they do try and get quite creative with regard to their criminal cases, so they get some of the money, actually, the court orders it to be paid back to Cape Nature. And in terms of the Cape Nature, the ordinance that they enforce, quite a lot of that money comes back to them through that. So it's not to say that operational budget is the only money that they have to spend, but I think they are, it is quite lean. Again, so there's the challenges that they've identified. Obviously, rhino is not a big issue within the Western Cape, but they do have priorities around certain things. And there's the Cape Nature. You can see there are about 97 rangers or guards, and then there are some other officials there as well. But you can see that budget that was given on the first slide only talks to their special investigative unit, whereas we had asked for the budget around all of these compliance and enforcement officials. And there's the equipment status, where they specifically identify what they were hoping. Then we move on to Northern Cape, and I think this province, again, just to highlight, is that it's probably the province with the least amount of capacity to actually do this work. So when they say very poorly staffed here, they really do mean very poorly staffed. You can see the EMIs, there's 8 on the approved structure, and then there's only 7 rangers. You know, they are asking for limited additional capacity, and I think we do need to be aware of, you know, what the capacity is when we require them to do additional work and come to meetings. And I know a lot of the meetings that we have from an environmental management inspectorate point of view, we actually fund those officials to come through for those meetings because they do have such a small amount of money to spend. And then that is the equipment status within the Northern Cape. Limpopo, again, we received the budget only for the investigation unit, which doesn't really give us a sense of what amount of money they actually have to do the full compliance and enforcement spectrum within Limpopo. Very similar challenges, again, where they are concerned about needing operational and personnel budget. And, of course, the rhino issue is a big concern within Limpopo, so one of the big challenges is working there with the police. There you can see from an EMI perspective or the investigator's perspective versus the rangers on the ground, and the additional capacity that they would want to ask for. equipment status as well with Limpopo. KZN then, it was always tricky to get information from KZN, but I think from these slides you'll see that they have quite a long-term plan in terms of what they're going to do about the rhino issue. They also do have quite a lot of donor funding within KZN. So although here you can see that it doesn't include personnel allocations, there is a plan over the years to actually deal with this up until 2016-17, where there is a budget actually set aside for their wildlife crime intervention program. And we would obviously ask for a breakdown further of what this involves. But, you know, when KZN Wildlife is in the meetings with us, it's not like they're asking for additional compensation funding or those sorts of things. There are some other challenges. You can see here they want to improve bush tactical training and the sustainability. You know, if there is a lot of donor funding coming in, how do you ensure that that is sustainable into the future? And then there's issues around syndicates and, again, working with the police. With regard to Gauteng, you can see here's the budget specifically for the biodiversity enforcement section. This is about 8 officials, and you can see currently it's not a big budget, and currently these officials are primarily located at OR Tambo. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done when CITES species come in and out of the country, and they are busy with endorsing those permits. And so that is basically where they are at the moment. They're not actually conducting much enforcement work within Gauteng due to that issue. There are no dedicated investigators due to the shortage of staff. There's a 50% vacancy within their special investigations unit. And there is no budget at all allocated in Gauteng for anti-poaching. So Gauteng does have its own reserves like Sekebos Rand, like Roodepoort Dam. There's various nature reserves there. But it's more the rangers on those reserves are more like nature reserve management people as opposed to compliance and enforcement people. So there is no, in the past, Gauteng did have anti-poaching units, but there aren't any in Gauteng anymore. And that is just the equipment status of what the special investigation unit of Gauteng currently has. What we tried to do here is, obviously a lot of that information came in, and we tried to almost summarize just what were the big issues that were coming out of all of the provinces. So, I mean, you've got the lack of information sharing and intelligence there in the top right-hand corner. Funding comes up all the time around compensation and personnel. The need for sustainable funding models. You can imagine with regard to the rhino issue, there are a lot of people coming forward, a lot of organizations to give funding, and we need to start ensuring that we can understand where all this funding is coming from and channel it towards the priorities. A lot of the funding for rhinos is also going into the Kruger National Park, which a lot of the provincial authorities complain about, saying that, you know, the money doesn't seem to be getting to them and is rather staying at the national level. Lack of capacity is there, training, skills, recruitment, etc. And then, of course, your operational challenges around equipment, ballistics. There's a number of those. Some of these things I mentioned at the beginning, I think the challenge in terms of trying to get consistent and uniform kind of numbers and information and the way in which they report makes it quite difficult because all the provinces are structured in different ways. So some of them, like in Northwest, you have the Parks Board and the department. In the Free State or Gauteng, you don't have a Parks Board. So, you know, the way in which the budgets are structured is quite different. I've talked about the anti-poaching and the rangers versus the investigative units. A lot of the provincial officials, and obviously because of where they sit, whether they sit with economic development or agriculture or whichever other department they're sitting with, a lot of them say that those are the priorities for that department, and therefore a lot of the budget goes towards those aspects and does not come towards the conservation and specifically the compliance and enforcement aspects. Some provinces, as I said, do receive donor funding, but what is the sustainability of that? We need to understand that in order to prioritize. And then finally, I think a lot of what I have said on the slide is just to really pull out those issues that I've mentioned where in Mpumalanga, which is bordering on the Kruger National Park, and looking at the statistics currently of the rhinos that have been poached within each of the provinces, Mpumalanga should really be a priority area. Mm-hmm. And with regard to those unfunded posts, it's very difficult for them to build up that capacity. Another thing, I just put it as an additional bullet, in some of your provincial parks, you've got an average age of the rangers sitting at about 57, 58 years. So you've also got a group of rangers that won't really be able to do some of the work that needs to be done in terms of fighting the rhino issues at the moment. Northern Cape, I've already said, is very poorly staffed with a low budget. Limpopo, there's high levels of poaching and additional capacity is should be viewed as a priority. And then there is that issue with Gauteng not really having much of a special investigative unit. They're stationed at OR Tambo, but we will be at, I think it's in April next year, there will be national officials that are placed at OR Tambo, which will free the Gauteng officials up to actually do what they need to do within Gauteng. There are a number of interventions. As I said, we have had our MinTech Rhino workshop back in July, August. That report, we're in the final stages of trying to complete that report, still waiting for certain information from the provinces and to try and put it in a uniform reporting structure. We are, through that report, also identifying all the funding opportunities. So whether it be the Peace Parks Foundation funding, whether it be funding coming through from the GIZ or from the European Union or from wherever, to try and bring all of that funding together and understand which challenges that can address. We also have a project within the department called the Jeff Rhino Project, which is focused in on forensic capabilities. It's focused in on information sharing as well as on information exchange and complying with the commitments that we have in terms of some of our international obligations. So, for example, recently we've actually bought trailers for most of the provinces, particularly the ones where there's rhino poaching happening. Those forensic trailers also have all the forensic equipment in them. We've just given a whole crime scene course, specialized crime scene course as part of this Jeff project. So there's a lot of interventions through the Jeff project that will address quite a few of these concerns, which is why we're wanting to put that report together, which actually pulls out those interventions that will address specific of these challenges. There is an issue around job creation programs. I think a lot of people, particularly with regard to the rangers, have identified possible job creation programs like environmental monitors that can be placed in the parks. And I know within the Kruger there's been some of these monitors that have been placed there to try and help with the capacity. Joint operational projects, and then we've also got a compliance and enforcement strategy that we've worked on for the last 2 years. And we're just waiting for that approval to come through. And then we can obviously talk about what the interventions and what the mechanisms are within that strategy to also try and deal with these issues. So, sorry, I know that took a little bit long, but, you know, there is quite a lot going on, and I think it's sometimes it's just a question of trying to consolidate all of that into a report so that everybody can understand and be on the same page. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think you indicated that there's another presentation.
Yes, there is, Chair. It's up to you, Chair, if you'd like. We can do the presentation and then take questions one at once.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going from where Francis was going quite specific. I'm going to go into the more general but, and try and look a little bit into the future as well. The Protected Areas Act, there are just three points that I think we need to look at for this presentation. The Protected Areas Act is set up for the protection of ecologically viable and representative areas of South Africa, the biological diversity, landscapes, seascapes. The second point is the register of protected areas. This is the data that we collect from all the management authorities about the protected areas. And in the past, it was a manual paper-based register. We're now moving finally into a proper digital one. We've run into a number of problems, but this is where we get where we maintain all our data, and this is where the data for most of the presentation comes from. And then I want to look at the management of our protected areas as well. Just to put it into perspective, those protected areas that are managed by the state, 51% of them are managed by sand parks. A further 4% is managed by Isimangaliso and Department of Forestry. That means 45% of our state's managed protected areas is managed by provincial management authorities, ranging from quite small to quite large areas. And if we go into the protected areas by province, you will see the provinces range from 6 protected areas up to 69 protected areas in KwaZulu-Natal, with a total area of between, with the smallest is 49 in the Northern Cape, up to about 475,000 hectares. So we're talking of quite substantial areas where people are running around trying to look after, conserve our areas. In 2010, we looked. In 2009, we did a survey on what is called the MET. It's a Management Effectiveness Tracking Tool, to see how well managed our protected areas are across the country. Now, if you look at the solid graph that's shown there, that showed the results or the distribution of the results of our protected areas. The average for our protected, average management effectiveness according to this system showed that our parks being managed at about 49% effective, which is not particularly good, and it gave us a little bit of a fright. When we presented it to the CEO's forum, it had the reaction that we expected, that the CEOs went off to go and try and correct this poor management system. And the things that we looked at were that were identified as being not very well managed was the legal and institutional framework, biodiversity management had issues, human resources management, Francis has talked about that. The financial management, which relates also to the human resources management, also was not very well done. The conservation effectiveness of these protected areas also came under question and needed checking. And the information management systems were poor. So these are the primary things that we try to get addressed. And then, if I can go back to that thing, in 2013, we got results back from the management authorities, and the open-sided graph shows you there is a definite move to the right, which is the way we want to be for our management effectiveness. But as an average, we still are sitting at only 65% effective management, or effectively managed. Now, if you think of you're getting up in the morning and you've got to drive to work, and you get into your car and only 65% of the time your car starts, that means you're only going to be driving into work 3 days out of every 5. That's not very good. So we actually need to improve our management of our protected areas as we stand right now. If you look at how each management authority has moved over the last 4 years, this is a graph that shows you on the left the 2010 figure in blue, moving across to the purple. In 2013, you'll show most management authorities have shown an improvement in their management effectiveness, but there is obviously still a number of issues, and I think the data that Francis put forward shows you a lot of the issues. Again, a staff and capacity and finance are the two huge ones. And then one of the things that also came up quite strongly in this survey was the one she mentioned in passing about the age of the rangers. Those guys that are 57 going on, they're a lot slower than the young, enthusiastic people. But they're also heading towards retirement, and there isn't a proper, there's not new blood that's coming in and being shown the ropes. And we are heading for a bit of a collapse in a couple of years if we're not careful. Okay, now looking towards the future, in 2008, we developed a national protected area expansion strategy. And this is to look at expanding out our protected area estate to a point where we believe we would have our representative sample of protected areas. From this, and I must point out that we're going through a review of this strategy starting at the beginning of next year. So the figures probably will change, and based on what we've achieved in the last 5 years, and what sort of developments also taken place. But what we did agree in 2008 was a series of protected areas targets. And if you look at what the provincial targets for 2029 are, the first column is the percentage area of each province that we need to be protected, to be able to, or to be put into protected areas in order to meet these targets. And if you go right across to the right-hand column, that translates into quite large areas. If you look at the Eastern Cape, it's 1.5 million hectares, which is an area that is just short of the size of the Kruger Park. It's a big area. And so we can go down the whole list. So how are we going to get there? Well, one of the obvious ways of doing it is to include the private protected areas into this register, and obviously we need to expand that part of our estate. If you look at that, the second column, if you add that up, it is just about the same amount of area as the state-run provincial protected areas. It's just about in the same thing, and it's an area that's where we need to expand. If you put this into that graph that I showed you earlier, our private protected areas at present are 16% of our protected area estate versus the 20% of the provincial nature reserves. Now, if we do expand that area, this comes back to a lot of the points that Francis was making. You might have conservation officials running around looking after the wildlife and nature within the protected areas, the state-run protected areas. But when you start dealing with private areas, and you still want to manage an expanded and more distributed, for instance, rhino population, you're going to have to expand your provincial EMIs, your management at that level. So if we need to virtually double that private lung estate, we're probably going to have to double a lot of our capacity. That has huge budget implications, and it has human resource implications as well. As an example of an area that we're looking at, the grassland is probably one of our most poorly protected biomes, and where we're trying to expand our protected area estate in it. And we've identified three large areas of grasslands that possibly can be expanded. The most northerly one is where the junction between KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, and the Free State is. And there, Free State and Mpumalanga are focusing the expansion plans there. That's a place called Seko Flay. They're looking at it. Free State is looking at expanding there. And then the Chrissy's Mere lake system Mpumalanga is looking at that area. The second area is in the northern part of the Eastern Cape, just south of the Lesotho border. Eastern Cape Parks and Tourism, and as well as Eastern Cape Province, are looking at developing a conservation plan or protected area, possible protected area there. And the third one is the area between Cadock and the well, the Mountain Zebra National Park and the Kom De Boom National Park. And we looking at effectively doing a protected environment between those two as a buffer zone between the two parks, and possibly linking down to the Addo Elephant National Park below that. So this is one of the examples that we're looking at. But as I said, we're going to be looking at expanding our capacity quite substantially. With that, thank you very much for your indulgence, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Perhaps on the last presentation, because we received it this morning, members who have questions can ask questions. But what we think we should also do is to also allow our researcher and the content advisor to go through the document and do the analysis of the document, advise the members, and if members then have questions to ask to the department, could do so during the course of the week. We then go back to the first presentation, and the members can ask questions. Let's first deal with the first presentation, and then we go to the second one. Just the point I wanted to raise, the point that was raised by the leader of the delegation with difficulty getting information from the provinces. From our surface committee, we take it that there's a regular interaction between the department nationally and the provinces. It doesn't have to wait for the committee to send questions to the department on these matters. For us, these are matters that should be a regular interaction around. So it's as a surprise from our side, especially with the problem of rhino poaching that is on the agenda of the country. It is a concern in the country. And therefore, for us, there should be regular interaction between the national department and its provincial departments and the parks board that are in the provinces on these matters, so that we arrest this matter. I will follow up with the questions later, but I will allow members to ask questions. I think Honorable Singh has been itching to ask questions. I'll start with him. And then if I will just, Mrs. Prince, Honorable Mrs. Laboskafni. Are there any other hands? Honorable Mr. Nyambi, Mr. Gaila. Yeah. Let's start with Mr. Singh.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, there's... the question of rhino poaching is, as you said, everybody's concerned. Now, there's two things that I think I'd like to raise. One is that I was the past chairperson of the Zimbello in KwaZulu-Natal, and I experienced many organizations popping up from the woodwork doing fundraising for rhino poaching. Is there kind of a register where we have any control of the monies that have been raised by these organizations, or it's kind of employment for somebody who's unemployed and decides, well, I can do some fundraising and earn a living out of it? Because during the period 2009 and 2014, we picked up on radio adverts, we picked up in newspapers of dinners arranged, big marches arranged, and donations that have been asked from the community. So I'd like to know if the department has got some kind of plan to control this kind of fundraising and not be used for the purpose that we really want to. The other very important thing is that the question of the rangers. Now, we have poachers, and that's bad enough to control. They have, in fact, more money, a bigger budget than we have as government. While that's happening, we also have rangers who are corrupt from the inside. And all those plans that you put in place, confidential plans, are given to the poachers. And in some instances, rangers are killing their own colleagues in order to give a poacher a chance to do his work. And that is poach the rhino's horns. Do we have any kind of mechanism or any plan on how we can curb this, where we have people from the inside? It's not as big as there's corruption everywhere. They say the South African police force has corruption, but the South African police force is a very big force. But the rhino poaching team of rangers are a smaller force. And we've got to find a mechanism where we could detect corrupt rangers from the inside. The other concern that is raised of the rangers that are 57, 58 years old, in fact my age, give my age away. And the concern is that we're not bringing new blood. What plans have we got in place to bring in the 22, 25-year-olds and train them so that when we come, they come to retirement age in a few years' time, we'd have a fresh group of rangers to take over from those persons who retired? Chair, for now, that's my question.
Thank you, Honorable Prince. Switch on your mic, please.
Sorry, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. I only have one question. Looking at the provinces, all of them are raising the same problems, challenges about funding, shortage of staff, etc. If you look through the whole report. My question will be, what is the department going to do about all these challenges? The rhino poaching problem is a war on its own. I can recall we sent someone to do a presentation to the minister. And I would really love to bring those people here to do a presentation. Because what they were saying in their presentation, for each rhino, after they will come in to do the work that will be killed, they will give 1 million rand back to the department. So sure was they about their plans that they have. And I really want to bring those people in to come and do a presentation. Because my problem is we are putting a lot of money into this thing. But every day we're reading about the war on rhino poaching. So what is your future plan, if there is any, to prevent this kind of thing? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Labuskar.
I just have to find the questions. The relationship you've mentioned, that the EMI personnel it's part of the table. They are not equally spread in the provinces, which I can understand because some provinces need to have more than others, but what is the reason, what role does the National Department play into provinces to make sure that, say, for instance, in Mpumalanga and provinces where they really need more of them, that they ensure that they have more than in some of the other provinces? That's the one first question. Then I also want to know the relationship between the EMI and SAPS, because these officers only have jurisdiction within the sandbox, as I understand it, and not outside. So they can do certain things, and then the police has to take over. And right through the presentation, it's been mentioned that that you need the SAPS. My question is, if you look at the convictions and acquittals in comparison to the number of cases, then we really have a problem, because not a lot of cases has been convicted and solved. So I would like to know, is there any structure that's existing between the various provincial departments and SAPS to try and better the situation? And if they do exist, what role do you, does the National Department play in that? Okay. Then, I want to ask a question on, this is also part of the question that I'm asking on the second part, but I would like to know if we have to, it seems to me one of the biggest problems at this stage that the department is facing, or that is to prioritize between compliance monitoring and law enforcement. And if we look at the lack of resources, financial as well as human resources, that in the end, we're at this stage already dealing with a lot of symptoms of this, that you sometimes have to prioritize this, and then this is lapping in the other way, like symptoms like water quality in urban areas and industrial pollution and all those things that you know better than I know. How do we, at this stage, what is the stand of the department? What stand do you take? Or is it on this? What is priority? What is the criteria when provinces have to decide how they cut the cake according to their finances? What is your criteria on that? This is, I think for now, the two questions.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Nyambi.
Thanks, Chair. I want to repeat what has been asked. The first question is in relation to this funded post, the approved post but not funded. If you can explain that, how is that possible? Maybe the rationale behind a structure where you'll have posts that are approved but they are not funded. Then the second one, it's about the challenges in almost all the provinces, because by the look of things, you can see that there are some serious challenges. But you have your MINMEC, even though we have the unfortunate part that the Minister and the Deputy, they're not here. But if you can share with us some of the things that were discussed at that level as recommendations to deal with these challenges, because all these provinces that we're talking about are here, that will give us a sense to see a possible way forward of dealing with what we are raising here, because our understanding is not for us to just discuss and then we have the information, then we do nothing about it. The other one is about the parks boards that are structured differently in these provinces. Any attempts to try to deal with that, because it has got serious implications. And maybe the last one, it's linked to the first question. The vacancies in one province, you'll see that it's worse compared to the other province, especially the one that I'm coming from. I'm from Mpumalanga, as I've done when I was doing introduction. And if you have more than 100 people relying on one vehicle, it's a very bad situation. So, but for me to be able to have a way that will assist us to address, is it possible to have a province when it comes to the issues that we are presenting here that can function at optimal level with these challenges that they are presenting to us? Because the other advantage, Chair, it's possible for us to have the people that will be coming from these provinces and the national department in one room so that we can be able to assist. Because we're not just asking these questions because we want you to respond to questions, but we want to have some suggestions so that you can deal with the challenges. But sometimes in the absence of information and knowledge, perceptions become irrealistic. So to deal with the perceptions that we might be having, assist us with relevant information so that we can be able to make the necessary suggestions. That's my take for now, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Gayla, and Honorable Mnambo, then Honorable Masango.
Yeah, no. I think the last speaker has covered me, because if you look at Mpumalanga, it's very bad. But let me just, the aging rangers, what is being done? We're sitting with the high unemployment of youth. Are there any plans to get youth involved in these rangers? Remembering very well, Chairperson, that there are some funds in different departments. For instance, there's an extended public works fund that you can make use of. Of course, then it depends on the provinces to skill youth, and there is some subsidy from the extended public works funds. Are you making use of that, or are the provinces making use of that? Because that would help them with the aging. Because some of the rangers, according to the information that you've given us, would be retiring in 2 years' time, 3 years' time. So is there anything being done about that? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Honorable Mlambo.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Mine is it's a concern about the lack of information sharing and intelligence. I don't know what is the department doing, because like Honorable Nyambe has said, it's just because the minister and the deputy, they are not here. Because when it comes to information sharing on these issues of rhino poaching, even on the side of the aging rangers, there is a department called the DMV, which has been newly formed. I don't know, in terms of recruitment and job creation for military veterans, those people have trained, they've got capacity in terms of knowledge capacity, so to speak. You talk of interpreters, and those people were in different countries, some of them. They know different languages. That capacity is there. I don't know how you do your recruitment, and where do you recruit those rangers? And why is there a serious problem in terms of intelligence sharing, really? because we've got crime intelligence, we've got military intelligence, we've got Department of Security. That used to be called state security, you know. Where can we identify a problem here in terms of information sharing? I'll leave it at that, Honorable Chairperson.
Last Honorable Member to raise question is Honorable Masango.
Thanks, Chair. I've been covered to about, I think, 80% of the questions. In fact, I've been covered in all the questions. Just that I needed to share what my thoughts were when I was reading, because we had the bigger presentation earlier on. And in my mind, I was saying, if all these things that are lack of this and lack of that and lack of the other could be adequately provided for, we would have so many people employed in the country and in some of the provinces where there is so much unemployment, especially for young people who would even come to this sector for as a career, as it were. And also, I think that is the first question, the first comment. And the second question is, when did this happen? When did things go wrong? Because it sounds like we had a thriving environment, and then suddenly there was people are aging and there's no equipment and all. When did things really go wrong? Because we sound like we're sitting in a crisis in a situation at the moment. And then the last thing that I wanted to say is I understand the issue that was highlighted immediately early in the presentation, to say we need to understand that there's this concurrence thing between national and province. But over the years, up to when the METT thing was done in 2010, surely there should have been a situation that says, here we have an opportunity to absorb so many people into employment in all these areas that we have, and then follow that up with the resources that are needed to make that happen. Those are my questions, Chair. Those are my thoughts when I was reading the presentation. Of course, the clarity, the presentation has been presented this morning. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Perhaps just to add on the questions asked, I think for me, as the Honourable Masango was indicating, as well as other Honourable Members, that when you look at the challenges, these are challenges that are taking place almost in all the provinces. Then I think also Honourable Prince also raised, because she said she's got only one question, and the questions that she was asking were indicating to this direction of why same problems in all the provinces. Then the question would be, why don't we have norms and standards on these issues? For example, you have norms and standards on personnel, that in each and every province you must have this personnel, to carry out the mandate on conservation. On equipment, you have the norms and standards with regard to equipment. But also with regard to, for example, with regard to just the allocation of money, you find that there are variances per province in terms of procuring the equipment. One province would budget 500 rand, for instance, for binoculars. Another one is 800, or even then the bulletproof. The amounts varies according to the provinces. Why can't we have norms and standards, or even a centralized procurement with regard to these matters, so that you know when you buy a bulletproof vest, this is the amount, so that you don't have varying amounts per province. But also even the budgets, you don't have these huge gaps. Others have they under budget, others over budget, you know, with regard to the, but also the issue of the platform. When you listen to the presentation, you find that there is no platform where the platform that brings together all the stakeholders so that you have discussions on these matters, you know, in one platform. For example, the stakeholders such as the police, there's a complaint of, almost in all the provinces, there's a complaint of poor or lack of information sharing. The presentation is not telling us what then the department is doing to address those challenges. Can't we have, for instance, ministerial task teams that includes all the stakeholders involved? If we have a problem with the Department of Police, why can't we ministers address that or even establish a ministerial task team? But even at administrative level, why can't then we have at administrative level interactions between the officials of the two departments? Why can't we enter into service level agreements with all the stakeholders involved so that we address these matters? Because for me also, besides this, the problem also is within the department itself. Because there was an indication that you struggle to get information from province, particularly the KZN. For me, I don't understand, because as I was indicating earlier, that there should be normal and regular interaction between the department and its national counterparts, so that this information is just a press of a button, you get the information on all these issues that are highlighted as challenges. For me, it's simple as that. Don't even have to ask the department to send you. There should be even, we've got ICT these days. You're supposed just to click the button. The button tells you the personal status of each province. And you press the button on equipment, what equipment each province is serving. You know, I think we are very advanced. I also wanted on the issue of rhino poaching. There's a mention of that most of the areas in the Free State where they have rhinos is a private property. So, what is the role of the department then with regard to that situation, or are those owning those private properties have their own mechanism in terms of addressing the situation? And also, what is the status with regard to their success? What is the success rate? If they are succeeding than the department, what is it that we can do? What kind of information sharing that we could have with those private owners so that we can also use the same? And also, because the main challenge that is also being is addressed is that of the personnel, lack of personnel. So what is the particular, the full complement? What impact is it having then on the biodiversity legislative mandate that's supposed to be implementing? Yeah. And the one last issue that I think it also relates to this issue of the norms and standards. You find that one province is paying, for instance, danger allowance. Others are not doing the same. Can we also, with regard to that, have norms and standards nationally with regard to those issues? Yeah. Thank you. If you can respond to those questions.
Thank you. Is it okay if I leave now? Okay, if I leave now.
There's a request just before, perhaps you respond, maybe you'll have time to just go through the questions. There's a request for a 5-minute break because it's very hot. I understand that there are people that are fixing the equipment, the aircon here. So that's why it's very hot. Some people are drowsy because it's very, very hot. That's a 5-minute break, and then we. Why are you digesting the questions? Thank you. 5 minutes, strictly.